This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. This week marks Donald Trump's first 100 days in the White House, a period of time that new presidents are judged on in terms of their ability to carry out their stated goals. Soon after his Electoral College win, Trump released his first 100 days plan, a list of ambitious goals that included the passing of laws to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, to fully fund a border wall with Mexico, to offer tax cuts to middle-class families, and much more. Trump did sign some executive orders to begin to keep some of his pledges. Perhaps the only concrete achievement he can tout is the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court, a pledge he didn't actually make in his first 100 days plan. And on immigration, Trump has begun fulfilling his ominous pledge to, quote, begin removing the more than 2 million criminal illegal immigrants from the country and cancel visas to foreign countries that won't take them back, end of quote. Under Trump, ICE, the immigration enforcement arm of Homeland Security, has been given broad discretionary leeway to round up and detain or deport undocumented immigrants, whether they have criminal records or not. Today, we'll turn to our correspondent, Arun Gupta, for part one of a two-part interview assessing the new president's plans. Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, and Salon. He writes regularly at Telesaur English, and recently he joined me in studio. Welcome back to the program, Arun Gupta.
Great to be with you, Sonali, in person.
That's right. So we're coming to Trump's 100 days in office. This is often a marker that is used to judge whether presidents are able to carry out their agendas. It's one that Trump actually set for himself. He laid out an agenda of what he would achieve in his 100 days. Now he's walking that back. He's called the idea of the 100 days as ridiculous and just an artificial marker. But let's hold him to what he said during his campaign, all the things that he said he would accomplish. From your perspective, domestically, has he managed to achieve the things that he said he would in 100 days?
No, not at all. The record is quite barren. He's very typical to how he ran his campaign. It's just bluster, bravado, threats, mean tweets. I think if people were to ask, is there any surprise? I think the only surprise is there's no surprise that he has run his presidency exactly the same way he's campaigned. It's empty of any actual substance beyond the rhetoric. That doesn't mean that there isn't some harsh policies going on, but he hasn't been able to achieve any of the really big policies. It's mainly more at the enforcement level.
What about the Neil Gorsuch appointment? I feel like if he can claim credit for even just one thing, it would be that. However, on that, he had the massive backing of his party, and Gorsuch seems to be much more squarely in the sort of Republican camp rather than the unpredictable Trump camp.
Mm-hmm. Well, but to get that through, they had to blow up the filibuster. And the thing is, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, said, oh, this is only going to be for nominations. But once you open the door, it's then the next time. So it probably came at a very high cost. Maybe it'll end up being a Pyrrhic victory in the end. Who knows? But, the question remains, we don't know what's going to happen with the other Supreme Court justices, because you have a lot of very old justices on the court. And so he may get another opening.
And Gorsuch himself, if you can look at any of Gorsuch's achievements within the first 100 days as part of Trump's achievement, he helped to put a man to death in Arkansas.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, Trump did pick someone in the mold of Antonio Scalia, as he said he would. So just someone who is viciously right wing. And we could say that is maybe his one achievement, but it was kind of handed to him on a silver platter by Congress.
So one of the main things that Trump campaigned on, that his party campaigned on, was the repeal and replacement of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. That seemed to be the sort of spectacular failure that maybe even Democrats didn't quite expect. But now they're saying, the Republicans are saying, they may be close to a deal on a new version of repealing Obamacare. What do you make of that?
Well, all he cares about is the deal. It doesn't matter how terrible it is. I mean, how many times was Donald Trump in bankruptcy? Three or or four times. It's again, it's all about the image. We saw with the first repeal attempt of Obamacare how he just kept going all over the place in terms of what was being suggested. You know, that we're going to have block grants to states. We're going to give waivers to states to not have any sort of essential benefits, that would have ended up cutting 24 million people. At times, he was also sounding like, you know, he would include things, that was an anathema to the Tea Party elements in Congress, the Freedom Caucus, such as keeping, you know, children until 26 on their health care, or keeping subsidies. You know, now he's trying to use subsidies as basically blackmail against the Democrat, and all he's doing is destabilizing the market. But, you know, clearly they own it at this point, and that's what the public polls say, that the Republicans own it. And he just wants the image of a deal. Whether it turns out to be disastrous does not really seem to matter to him.
Now, he has also promised to talk about tax reform. In fact, on his 100th day on Wednesday, apparently he's going to make a big announcement with the Republicans on tax reform. And of course, the Republicans have been eyeing the tax code for a long time. They want to make it much more favorable to wealthy Americans, although they don't come out and say that. But what has he actually done on tax reform? You can't just sort of unveil something on the fly, right? Has he even laid the groundwork for what's sure to be very complicated policy?
Well, he'll say things that'll completely surprise and shock even his high-level officials. So when he said this was right after his Treasury Secretary, the guy from Government Sachs, Mnuchin? Mnuchin had just said a day or two before that we're not going to have anything until the summer, until perhaps August, if that. And so he completely catches them flat-footed. And now apparently there's even disputes over contradictory elements in the bill. So he's just making it up as he goes along. He thinks that basically a tweet or a statement he has a very dictatorial mentality. There is no doubt about that. That whatsoever, and so he thinks it's kind of let it be said, let it be done. But fortunately, that's not how it works. Even though we do have an oligarchic political system, it still involves a lot of sausage making behind the scenes. There's a lot of negotiations, and so he hasn't. I would expect that this is going to fall flat on its face, like pretty much everything else has. You know, like the executive orders about the Muslim ban blew up in his face as well.
Right. And I want to get to that in a moment. But on this issue of, him kind of being a presidenting by tweet, if you will. I don't know if you saw, there was an interview he did one-on-one with Associated Press, and he seemed to not have a real sense of how big a job the president's was. He was sort of blown away by the fact that it's this huge job, and that we're talking about, agencies that have budgets bigger than the biggest corporation in the world. And this man is our commander in chief. He's the nation's top public servant. But he is publicly expressing surprise at the extent of what's required of him. But he's still golfing more than he did even before he became president. Almost as though he's trying to run away from his job.
No, he's clearly completely incompetent. He's petty. He's a bully. But I've been saying for a year also, the guy is a genius. He's a genius at manipulating the media, people's emotions, and being a demagogue. But when it comes to actually running the Oval Office, he said about healthcare. Who could imagine that it was so complicated? It's right. That's why there's tens of thousands of lawyers and policy experts. None of them imagined it could be so complicated. complicated. He said the same thing after he met with President Xi of China. You know, who thought North Korea was so complicated? Well, actually, there's a whole foreign policy and national security establishment, you know, that's been dealing with this issue for 60 years. He's very much making it up as he goes along. And my worry is you know, at this point, I'm starting to feel like, look, we've seen this movie before. There is one big plot twist, a different plot twist this time. With the Bush administration, it was planned incompetence. I think that was kind of the overarching style of the Bush administration, that, you know, especially we saw with the occupation of Iraq and Hurricane Katrina, that there was incompetence was part of their planning ideology. Here, what we have is planned craziness.
Or unplanned incompetence?
well, that too. But it's also planned craziness. And I'm not someone who's given over to worst case scenarios or paranoid fears. But Trump does truly make me worried about nuclear exchange.
So on this issue of the Muslim ban, the courts have stymied the Trump administration every step of the way. There are different iterations of the travel ban. And then you had Attorney General Jeff Sessions just recently make a bizarre and insulting statement about a judge sitting on a small island in the middle of the Pacific telling him that he can't enact his Muslim ban. It's not just Trump that's super unprepared for his job. So many of the people that he has put into place, whether they've had government experience like Jeff Sessions or not, like Rex Tillerson or Jared Kushner, it's just baffling to think about the fact that these people are in charge of the country. Now, what do you make of how far do you think they're going to push this attempt at putting this ban forward? Because the courts are sort of reminding them, hey, Constitution.
Well, I think for one, you know, we have to see the broader social context of this. You know, there's this aspect of the law or way to approach a law called critical legal theory, which basically says that the law is embedded in social institutions that it is not a neutral tool. So I think the reason that we've seen these judges in Hawaii, in Seattle, in the Mid-Atlantic region who have slapped down parts or most of both of the executive orders around the Muslim ban is because they see the judiciary under threat from Donald Trump, the way he has gone directly after the judiciary, calling them terrible judges, so-called judges, the way he went after Judge Curiel, the U.S.-born judge of Mexican heritage. And so they are acting socially in that they see they have to protect this institution. So I think they're more willing to be out there and say, like, this needs to be struck down. You know, they use obviously constitutional grounds, as in the case in, you know, with both of these executive bans, that this is, you know, it does not give due process. It violates equal protection under the law, freedom. It's basically goes against the Establishment Clause, which is a First Amendment freedom of religion. So in all these different ways, they have been striking it down. And with the second one, then Trump immediately comes out and basically you have to wonder, is this guy, you know, like I said, he's a genius, but he's not erudite. He doesn't have book learning. He's also can be incredibly stupid. He comes out and says, well, I wanted the first one anyway. That can immediately be used against him because that shows his intent. The judges are allowed to look at the intent behind a policy. So if he's saying, I wanted the first one anyway, which was a naked Muslim ban, that's why so many judges ruled against it, then he's basically telling the courts that he wants a religious ban, which is unconstitutional.
Right, and all of his tweets over the past year, his campaign speeches, all of those are fodder for judges to use to determine what his intent is. Now, of course, the Republican Party and Trump are looking toward remaking the lower courts as well. It's not just the Supreme Court. The lower courts could be completely rewritten, but still, I mean, they have to, you know, you have to be a judge who understands the Constitution. In the case of the courts, you can't just put somebody in place who has not been a lawyer, you know, unlike, say, the kinds of people that Trump has appointed to his cabinet, zero government experience. In the case of the courts, you do have to at least put someone who's passed, you know, who's got a stamp of approval from the American Bar Association. So how much traction could they have on the courts?
Well, you know, it's the only thing I think the reasons aren't worse, things aren't worse than they are, is because of this incompetence, the unplanned incompetence, shall we say. And so they have to get their act together. They have to vet candidates. They have to, you know, have hearings before the Senate. The Democrats can, you know, they can gum up the works to a degree. We know that, you know, in terms of the executive branch, that the Trump administration is just way behind the number of appointments of the Obama and Bush administrations before them. So this isn't necessarily, you know, that high on their list when, you know, there's some departments where, I forget, I think it might have been the State Department, where you have like 23 undersecretaries and they only have like two, or at least as of, you know, like a few weeks ago, they only had like two in place. So they basically have, they don't really know what they're doing. And, you know, Trump is admitting that outright. And we also know that he basically rejects anyone who's spoken out against him at any point. So they all these names that do get forwarded are then crossed off the list because he provokes so much opposition from the right and within the Republican Party itself.
Right. And there's reports that suggest he doesn't actually do anything besides tweeting and hate watching the news.
Right.
Let's talk about immigration, which I know you've been writing a lot about, and this is a huge aspect of his campaign. It was a huge, you know, part of the promise that he ran on. It's probably a big reason why he won so much support among certain sectors of white America. And because the executive branch has a lot of discretion on immigration enforcement, it's also the place where he's been able to actually achieve something, if you look at rounding people up and separating families as an achievement. So what, within the first 100 days, has he done, setting aside the Muslim ban, what has he done on undocumented immigrants, primarily those that are traditionally come from Latin America?
Well, this is where the power of the presidency comes in. It is the most powerful institution in human history. It has over 2 million personnel, you know, and it includes the military, the CIA, Department of Homeland Security, you know, EPA, Secretary of State, on and on and on. Now, under the Department of Homeland Security, you have all these different divisions, such as Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, the Customs and Border Patrol. And so what we've seen is, what they made clear is early on, and Spicer said it himself at a White House press briefing, the press secretary, we're going to unshackle ICE. So what they've done is they've given broad discretion for ICE. And I think this is, unfortunately, the left has failed to really understand how immigration policy worked under Obama, because by calling him deporter in chief, while it may have been an effective political strategy to put pressure on him, one, it actually wasn't accurate, and two, I think it desensitized people to activists to how much worse things could potentially get under Trump.
My guest is Arun Gupta. He is an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, and Salon. He writes regularly at Telesur English and is a regular correspondent for this program. And he's written some articles in The Progressive about immigration. You've just been watching part one of a two-part conversation about Trump's first 100 days in office, with a special focus on immigration. On tomorrow's show, we'll air part two. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.